We're going to start with Erica A. Hi, my name's Erica. Wow, I thought there was a break for some reason. let's see. I got some directions, so let me go with it. The first time I came to Al-Anon, it was actually suggested by a friend who was in AA, and I just remember wanting what she had. She glowed, she had like the serenity, and I just always felt kind of hollow, and I was always just looking and looking and looking. And at the time, I was dating my qualifier, who's now my fiancé. And I remember sitting in the rooms and just, like, listening and crying because I remembered things from my childhood, but never putting it together with him. Like, he was in an alcoholic. He was in recovery. And he was, like, I had just put him on this pedestal, absolutely perfect. He could do no wrong in my eyes. And I was just absolutely insane, and I knew it. So I didn't stay very long. You know, I went into the rooms, was like, okay, this isn't for me. The second time I came and I found this home group, it was in November of this year. He came to me and let me know that he had had thoughts of drinking. And at this point, he had celebrated 1 year of sobriety and had 1 year in just dry. Like it wasn't in recovery, it was dry. And I got to see the progression of it. He went from being like this just really great and outgoing guy to just miserable, absolutely miserable. And I didn't understand it because he wasn't drinking. And when he came to me with that confession, I knew where to go. And at first I was really embarrassed because I came into these rooms and I was like, I walked away the first time from you guys. And I came and I didn't stick around, you know, because again, things got kind of normal in our house. And so, you know, I pulled away. I didn't really need you guys. But one of the gifts that I just realized in preparing to share here today was I got to meet my sponsor. I went into the meeting and she was sharing exactly what I was going through. You know, her husband was also struggling with his sobriety. So the third time, and this time, when I came back to Al-Anon, again, he came to me with thoughts of drinking, and this time I knew because I was just crazy. I was crazy in and of my own good. Just simple tasks like remembering my PIN number. Some of you were at that meeting where I was just like frantic. Couldn't remember my PIN number from just how crazy my head was. Like there was just so much going on. I couldn't hold a single thought, couldn't remember this combination of numbers, and it was really upsetting me. And I came back and I knew who to call. I immediately called my, you know, who's now my sponsor, and I reached out. And I knew this time, I just knew I was done. I knew that this time when I came back, I had to do it for me because I was broken. And I still have that fear, and I think it's kind of like a healthy fear today, where I worry that like at any moment I can just break, I can just snap. And not like violent snap, but, you know, they're just going to take me away and put me in a padded room and they'll take me out to get sun and that's about it, you know, because that's just where my disease can take me. And I also knew that I had to come to terms and come to acceptance with, you know, my qualifier. And at this point, he did drink. He drank. And we were supposed to get married, and I got to walk through that surrender in these rooms. We got to postpone the wedding, even though I fought for that tooth and nail, but I got into so much pain. I was absolutely insane. And in my mind, I thought, what difference does it make? I, you know, went into the relationship fully aware of the fact that he was an alcoholic. What does it matter that he's drinking? You know, he's still an alcoholic. But thank God, you know, that I was given the gift of time, and I just get to do it right this time. Because I had no sense of myself. You know, you would ask me, like, what do you like? And I'd just be waiting for you to give me a hint of what you like. And then, you know, then I'd agree, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I like that too. Like, just a shell of a person, basically. And it's been, you know, through getting to work the steps, I just did my fifth step. I'm currently on my seventh step and got stuck actually on my seventh step because I couldn't think of assets. And, you know, just got to work. I've been, you know, getting to work with that and just be open with people. I can't do that. I can't be open with people. As much as I was always, like, in the midst of crowds and in the midst of things, like, it was like being alone in the midst of all of that. So it was really interesting. But, you know, I get to do this for myself this time, and I get to stay for me. And, you know, some of you heard this already, but I got to hit a pretty good bottom of my own during the long weekend, the Memorial weekend. I got really suicidal and made an attempt, and I reached out to you guys, and that was me within these rooms, too. You know, that was me having some time in program that I, you know, went through with that, and that's just where the disease can take me. You know, I took it on. I took on his, just where he was, like, just drinking. It's hard to see someone kill themselves slowly. And hitting that bottom, and I take no credit for it, he reached out and also hit his bottom. And it's been tricky, though, like, not getting meddling in his business. He got fired by his sponsor, and I wanted to become surrogate sponsor until he found another one. You know, and I just know today that I don't get to do that. And it's kind of bittersweet. I mean, when we first met, it was like 7 days a week. He was just full on. And that's why I loved him. That's why I was so attracted to him. Because he was just such an example. You know, he was just radiating, like just energy and this love. And that's what attracted me to him. And when he, you know, when that light started to fade, it was really hard for me to see that happen. Because he was pretty much my example. He was like my role model. And, you know, now, like, the tables have turned a bit, and it's hard because I feel, and I'm kind of walking through this one, I feel like I'm growing, and he's not. And I don't know where that's going to take me, but, you know, today I don't have to work on that alone. I have a God in my life, and, you know, I don't have to be afraid. So it's just, I know these tears like make it seem like a bad thing, but it's actually just emotion. It's just pure raw emotion. And it's a good thing, though. It really is a good thing that I got to, you know, come into these rooms, and I still love that man with every fiber of my being. And I don't judge him, and I love him, but my type of love will kill. You know, I could just, like, really smother the life out of him. And I'm just glad that I get to come here and turn that energy towards myself and try to become a better person. So that whatever happens, whether it's, you know, we stay together or we don't, I get to do it for the right reasons today and not because I'm fearful or, you know, just desperate. So, you know, it's just been a gift. And I think that's pretty much it. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. And next we have Joni N.
Hi, I'm Joni, a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I'd like to thank Natalia for asking me to speak tonight. Experience, strength, and hope. Well, I came into the program about 2.5 years ago. I wasn't raised in the disease of alcoholism, but the person who got me in the doors of Al-Anon was our son, who at the time was 17, and had already gone through a couple of programs pretty unsuccessfully because he went kicking and screaming. In fact, once I think we basically had him kidnapped in the middle of the night and put on an airplane. So it wasn't his will. It was ours. But still, for the first three programs, the words Al-Anon were never spoken. I hadn't heard about it until the third program. And so I came through the doors, and I was pretty much done. And I knew I couldn't fix him, whatever that means. and I needed to start focusing on myself because I was going down, and my mother is the one who basically said, I'm not worried about him anymore, I'm more worried about you. So that was a little bit of a wake-up call because I had basically made our son my God. He was everything, and I was totally obsessed with trying to get him sober because I thought that was my job. He was a minor, and I was his mother, and it was my job, and I was going to do it. I hadn't, in my mind, failed at anything before, and I wasn't going to fail with the thing that was the most important to me, one of my children. But through these, in these rooms, the help of a sponsor and many wise people, some of whom are here tonight. I don't want to name names because I'll start crying. I learned that it was a disease, and it had a name. It was alcoholism, and that there are three endings if you don't get help. Let's seek help seriously, and that's, you know, obviously prison, insanity, or death. But I also learned that as an Al-Anon, if I didn't seek help, those were my three options as well. Death, insanity, or prison. Because, you know, as Erica said, our kind of love can kill, and we can commit felonies just as easily as an alcoholic if we're trying to keep an alcoholic sober. Not that I ever did anything like that, but I could see it maybe ending up that way had I not got help. And what I learned was to put one foot in front of the other, trust in a God, and show the way the best I could. And our son was a real deal alcoholic, and those of you who are know what that means. And he lost his battle on April 21st of this year at the age of 19 to a heroin overdose. He had an overdose before that on May 23rd, the year before, and he lived through that one, obviously. And I remember seeing him in the hospital all in every kind of piece of equipment imaginable to keep him alive, a ventilator, and he looked like Frankenstein. But I could still see that look on his face, even though he was unconscious. It told me, I'm not an alcoholic. This was just a mistake. I could just see it. I knew the words out of his mouth when he woke up were going to be, well, his words were, this is just pneumonia, Mom. I can sort of laugh now, but at the time I was like, oh, God. But what I got that day was my bottom, my real bottom, and started listening to God. And believe it or not, I started seeing birds, and I started hearing sounds, and I started seeing the rest of the world, because God was basically, I heard it say, get your house in order. So instead of being panicked and running around and trying to save his ass and doing all the things I would have otherwise done, he had to find sober living, he had to bounce around, he had to do what he had to do, and I had to do what I had to do. And I started going to 6 meetings a week. I had a sponsor, but I called her every single day, did my program, worked my steps. We have a daughter who's just a year younger than our son. Every time he was doing his thing, we still had our daughter to raise. And so we focused on what we could focus on and let him do his deal. In the meantime, our relationship just kept getting better with our son. He understood that we understood. He understood that there wasn't anything we could do, and we knew it. He understood that we loved him, and he understood that he knew he had to lie because he had to lie, and I didn't take it personally anymore. And when the coroner's office came that morning, the doorbell rang, and I just knew it. But the day before was a really great day. He came to our house. He worked with his dad in the yard. He laughed. We had a good time. I had a panel that night. I was actually wearing a skirt. I thought about that on the way here. I was running out the door, and somebody came to my door, our door he'd never met before. He didn't live with us, but he was just there doing some work that afternoon. He said, Mom, what are you doing? Where are you going? I said, I'm going to go do this panel. And the last thing he said to me was, oh, Mom and the middle-aged ladies, off to save the day. And he just giggled and laughed and went about his business. And at that time, he had just gone through another program and had 60 days of sobriety and was just happy and confident and doing well at his job, but he just got that wild-ass idea one more time. And he and a friend went and did what they did. And because the friend was expected at work the next day, they were able to save him. He lived. Our son did not, because he was not expected at work that day, so no one was checking on him. And, you know, that's just what happens in this disease. And when the coroner was at our door explaining all this, I just sat down and I started saying what I was grateful for. I was grateful that no one else died. I was grateful it wasn't in a car accident. I was grateful that we had a good ending. I was grateful that I had no resentments. And I was mostly grateful that he did not have to lie anymore and look me in the eyes and lie. And that's what I'm most grateful for to this day. And we've walked through a lot since that day. This week we had to bury my mother-in-law, who lost her battle with lung cancer. We've buried my father-in-law. We've walked through a lot. Yet I consider this to be the best of times and the worst of times, because somehow through all this I found my God and I've hung on for dear life. And I've got my strength and I've got my dignity and we've got our daughter and we've got a very good life. And I'm just going to say this story and then I'm going to close it out. We go to a parents of alcoholics meeting every Saturday morning. It's an Al-Anon meeting. And I wish I could say it with the kind of humor this woman says. She's got just a great sense of humor, and I know we could all use a laugh on a Saturday night, but I'll try to just get through it. And she's explaining how she hit her bottom, and her husband, who was the son's stepfather, had to go to China on business. So she was left alone all by herself for 10 days to live in her whole untreated Al-Anon glory with this son. And in 10 days, she was able to spend all her money, give him all the food out of the house, co-sign on a loan, everything. And out of all that stress, her back went out and she could no longer drive. So in 10 days, she couldn't leave the house, she was broke, she had no food, and her back was out. And this is before her husband came home. And the son came one more time, and she explained all this to him, and his response back to her was, "You don't ever do anything for me." And we all laughed because we'd all been there. But you know, on the way home, it hit me, and it probably has already hit all of you, but I'm a little slow. That's the disease of alcoholism, and it takes everything. And when it's taken a little break, it will come back for more. It just takes everything. And it doesn't matter if you're the alcoholic or you're the Al-Anon. It just takes everything. It is relentless. And why do we keep, people will ask me, why do you keep going to meetings? You know, your alcoholic is gone. I'm sorry about that, but why do you keep coming? It's like, because the disease takes everything. And if I stop coming, it will come back and take me. So I'm so grateful to see everybody's faces here tonight. I'm so grateful to be part of this program, and thank you so much for letting me share.
And now we have Bonnie. Bonnie M.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. Today I love an alcoholic, and I love a lot of alcoholics, actually. I didn't grow up in the disease. My brother smoked marijuana, and it didn't bother me. It was just his deal. I was the baby of the family, but I knew there was something up because the rest of my family, all my brothers and sisters, were trying to protect me from my brother and what he was doing. And my eyes went right on them. And I thought, what's the matter with them? I love my brother. He's just doing that thing. And I know it was wrong, but it didn't really affect me. That's when I knew that I was probably, today, looking back, that I belong in Al-Anon, because I was an Al-Anon then. I was always the party pleaser, always putting together people to make it happy, and I felt their feelings. I didn't want them to be sad. I was always the people pleaser, trying to put everything back together again, Humpty Dumpty scenario. So when I came into these rooms, it was after a long period of 19 years of marriage to my alcoholic husband, who was my boyfriend. through high school, and actually right at high school, senior year I met him, and I used to run with him. I used to do, you know, the partying and the drinking and the partying, and I thought it was time to stop, and I did, and he kept going. And sooner or later, I thought that things that I would do to make him stop was my answer. And I sure found out that marriage didn't stop it. Having babies didn't stop it. Actually, it got worse. And my husband knew that the drinking was a problem, so he stayed gone. So he didn't really drink at home. I was raising kids and being a volunteer in every volunteer organization I could be involved with. I coached soccer and baseball and went to PTA and did all the, you know, things that a mom does for their kids. And I got into sports too, and I worked full time, and so I was really too busy to keep my eyes on my husband. And when he drank, I almost knew exactly what it would take for him not to come home. It was almost like he had a few great days. Behavior was great, and I remember it's going to be this weekend that he doesn't come home. And sure enough, it was. It was almost like he set himself up for the sabotagement of getting drunk and not coming back home. And he did a few things, you know, throughout the years, and I didn't count the number of drinks because he didn't bring it home, but I remember counting the books of AA because we used to sell them off at garage sales when he was sober again. So he got to be this periodic drunk that would drink for a while, then it would be a problem. He would go into a program, he'd get a sponsor, he'd get on the right track, life was happy, and then all of a sudden he'd drink again. Well, we didn't need the book anymore, I thought, so we sold it at a garage sale, and there were four of those. So over the period of time, I was counting those books. And when I came into the rooms of Al-Anon, it was of his suggestion, because the last straw for him was the last straw for me. I couldn't live with it anymore. I had three kids who were now teenagers, and they wanted to know some answers. They wanted to know, is this the way that mom and dad get along? Fighting. I used to be able to manipulate so well that I would give him a responsibility, and so that he would come home and take care of the responsibility so that he wouldn't drink. None of those things worked, and I kept trying and trying. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to divorce him, but I didn't want a divorce. Divorce wasn't even in the cards in our family. So got into Al-Anon from his suggestion, got a sponsor. I heard that just keep coming back. I didn't know what for. I just wanted to check off the list that I tried everything, and Al-Anon was the last thing on my list. But before I decided to leave, I started to listen, and I started to hear the things from you ladies in these rooms that I could relate to. And when I started relating, I started putting it into my own life of what I could do. And I couldn't do it anymore. I was just tired. I was worn out. All the plates were spinning and they were falling, and I couldn't keep them up any longer. So I took direction from my sponsor and I started working a program. I started getting into the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which, by the way, I read to the wives about five times. So I knew that chapter really well. But I didn't know the first 164 pages, which I came to have a lot of compassion when I started reading those pages. I had a lot of resentment when I walked in, and it completely did a flip when I started reading the big book. And I got some answers from doing that. The first tool I remember using in Al-Anon was detachment. And for a time being, I thought, detachment, I just need to stay clear of what he was doing and his behavior. So I'd focus on my kids and what they were doing. I got them into Alateen as well, so we were all doing program together. And it didn't really matter whether or not my husband was drinking or not at that moment, because I had so much going on in my head to fix. So it was actually a gratitude. I was really grateful that I got to see what really set me up to do the things that I did. And I was given hope that I could change those things. And those things started getting better for me and for my kids. And then my kids didn't realize that they needed it anymore, so they stopped going to Alateen. And then I was doing it all alone. And then my husband slipped. And, you know, he's just a periodic, and that's what he does. And that's what I get reminded about, is just, you know, he's doing what he does. He's an alcoholic. That's what he does. And you can choose today to be with him or not. And every day I choose to be with my alcoholic husband. I love him. I have a lot of gifts from this program. I have the tools of this program on how to parent my kids. And the gift of one of those children that have come back for herself and her own reasons, because she was in a relationship and I couldn't help her with the program, and she actually wanted me to help her. And I said, I can't help you. I can mother you, but I can't be your sponsor. You got to do that on your own. So she came back on her own. I got out of her way, and you guys helped me do that. I worked the steps. I gave it away. I work with women in this program. I just help give them the experience, strength, and hope that I have to apply to their life. And that's all I do. It's helped me in my workplace. I have a set of headsets that I put on my head, because I will get into gossip and I will get into talk around the office very easily, because I know what they need to hear. And I have their answer. They just haven't asked me yet. And that's my ego. And so I can squash that and just let them do what they need to do. And again, by me getting out of the way, they find their answer. I found a lot of humility in this room with the tools. And with my husband, you know, communication has been a lot better. Our marriage is, you know, pretty sound. It's lying on a better foundation today than it was when we came into these rooms. You know, he was drinking a lot the last few months. And I went to a women's safe place not too long ago, and I had to hear it straight from an alcoholic who told me, you know, what are you doing? The kids are out. They're not going to meetings anymore. You got to get your kids back into meetings, because I was starting to have my life unmanageable again. So I came home, and with that, you know, I did what I needed to do as a parent. You know, it was pretty serious. And, you know, I had people that I looked up to, and I said, you know, what am I doing? I want to be liked? What's that about? I got to be a parent first. And so I got back on my path and got the kids back into their meetings. And, you know, not that that helped, but I started to see my husband, everybody was leaving, doing their deal, doing their meetings, and he was staying at home. And in the beginning, I felt bad for him that he was staying alone. But I thought, you know, my sponsor said, you know, maybe that's a good thing. Let God take over that. And today he's sober. He's back working a program. He's doing whatever he needs to do to stay sober, and I thank him every day. And I guess the greatest gift that I could say today is that he thanks me when I come to Al-Anon meetings. And we walked out tonight, and I, you know, we were just getting ready to leave, and we said, okay, good night. And he's like, thank you. And I know what that means from him. He's thanking me that I'm doing what I need to do so that he can stay sober. Because if I didn't come into these rooms to get what I needed to get, I'm sure that that could be another excuse for him to drink. I may not cause it, and I can't cure it, but I sure could get him thirsty. You know that? I can do what I need to do and push him so far over the edge that he could decide. So I just don't choose to do that today, and I just owe a lot to my God for having, you know, put me into an open heart and an open mind enough to see what I need to see to better myself for my family. And I love alcoholics. I love Al-Anon. I love what it does with our family today. I've got a daughter that I can look at and watch her grow. And, you know, that's the gift that you guys give her today. And who knows what God's going to do in our home, but I know today that we're happy, joyous, and free. And thank you so much for allowing me to share.
Next, we have Marlene M.
Hi, Marlene. And I loved everybody sharing tonight. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon today, and I do love an alcoholic. And I remember my first meeting on a Saturday night, my first introduction to this home group. And I remember hearing somebody say, you know, I'm grateful today because I love an alcoholic. And I thought, that's pretty shallow. And I would never be grateful for any alcoholics in my life, but that's where I was 5.5 years ago. And I'm grateful for family recovery because I heard it here, you know, and I heard that at my first meeting, and I thought, I can detach. That's not a problem. I got a brick wall, and I know exactly how high to build it and who to let in and who to peep through, and it wasn't working for me. You know, I got here because my husband's drinking was bothering me. That's putting it mildly. I heard about Al-Anon 2 weeks before I got here. So I am grateful that I did do something relatively quickly. And when I came in, my first meeting, I heard the three C's. And I didn't necessarily think about my husband, but I thought, I can't control it. I can't cure it. And I didn't cause it. And I knew I didn't cause it because the reason, one of the things that really hit home with me was I grew up with my dad drinking, and I grew up with my mom drinking with him, but I was scared as a little girl about hearing, my parents didn't know how they got home at night, and I loved my dad because I understood what he was doing, but I hated my mom because I didn't understand, you know, and it's like she'd drink with him so that he wouldn't drink so much, and I'm the oldest of three, and I was in control of everything. You know, when it came to holidays, when it came to anything. Oh, somebody's having a problem. Somebody's calling Marlene to the rescue. And that first meeting, I remember walking out and thinking I had all this weight lifted off my shoulders with the three C's. And I thought, you know, they read the steps, and I thought, yep, he needs to do that. Yep, he needs to do that. And I didn't ever think of my husband or as my father as an alcoholic because he was functional. He always provided. He was a good dad, and I'm the only girl, and I'm daddy's little girl. And my mom had a problem, and I didn't understand her behavior. And, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 16, and I thought, finally. You know, because I knew they had a problem, and they didn't love each other anymore. And it was amazing to me that people said to me, probably 2 months before I got to Al-Anon, they would say, boy, your husband and your dad, they really get along. It's like you married your dad. And I was like, oh, I don't know that I like that feeling. I mean, I love my dad, but I was like, oh, I think they're wrong. And but I remember when I got here, I did not want my daughter, who was one at the time, to grow up hating her mom. And so I was here for the first 4 months for my daughter because I didn't want her to hate me. And he had the problem, and I didn't. And so I remember people telling me, just keep coming back. You're here for yourself. I'm like, nope. I heard what you said. No, I'm not. I'm here for her. And that was okay. People were very tolerant. And they said, okay, just keep coming back. We love you. Keep coming back. And I remember I would call my sponsor in the morning, and I would say, he. And she's like, what did you do today? I'm like, I'm not here for me. I'm here for him. I wasn't here for him. I didn't have any hope of him getting sober. I didn't have any desire to try to do that. So when people would share that, I was just like, well, that's their deal, but I'm different. I'm so different. And and I remember hearing from an alcoholic. I was in the babysitting room one day, and I heard from an alcoholic, and I said, well, I'm different because, you know, I'm living with the active disease. And my husband's drinking right now while I'm here in an Al-Anon meeting babysitting. And he said, oh, there's about 40% of the women in your group who live with active drinking. I'm like, no, who? You know, here people have been telling me. And I was like, I didn't hear it. I still hear things today best from alcoholics. I could be talking to somebody on the phone, and I'm like glued to what they're doing. I'm like, they probably have a drinking problem that if I really knew them in person, I'd be glumming on to them. So, you know, for me, what this program has done is changed. It took about 4 months before I said, I'm here for me. And it's okay, because I had read, you know, I kept track of the number of books. You know, my husband, he's been doing his deal since he was 7, and I remember when we moved in, when we bought our house and we were married and moved in together, there were these books that he had on the bookcase, you know, and they never had these pretty, you know, these pretty paper ones. There was a couple of them with like those brown sack ones, you know, you make the book one, and it had 12 on it. So I didn't know what was in it, and I didn't ask, I just put it on the bookshelf. And so that first night I heard, you know, learn all you can about alcoholics and alcoholism. And I went up to somebody at the meeting. I said, how do I do that? They said, oh, you get a big book. So I think I have, my husband has some of those. Well, there's a chapter to the wives. Okay, so I studied that chapter. You know, I had memorized that one too. And I remember I got a sponsor, and she's like, okay, you need to read from page one, the foreword even, to understand what this is about. And I was like, oh, this is history, and I hated history growing up. You know, I just really, because I'm a very studious person, and I'm a very analytical person, and I've heard other Al-Anons talk about pie charts, and let me tell you, I can do that. But I hadn't tried that one on my husband yet, and I bought all the books, my first meeting, I bought all the books, and started reading them. And then I started making the reach out calls, and then I got a sponsor right away, and she said, just let's go to some open AA meetings. And this was the home group, and I came to the family meetings, and I heard what you guys were saying, what the alcoholics were saying. They would share it, and I'm like, how many years did he have sober? He has 10 years, and he still thinks and acts that way. My husband is at home guzzling beer, and he thinks and acts that way. And after a very short period of time, I realized, that's how you separate the disease from the person. And then I could understand detaching a little more. And when I would come home and he would be saying something, I would turn him into a little, you know, beer bottle. And, you know, like the Super Bowl commercials, I would just say, wah, 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 wah. And I knew that was a disease. That's how I separated my husband's behavior from his disease, or my husband from the disease. And, you know, I came in to get a divorce. I marked it in my book, 6 months. I heard it first night, 6 months. Don't make any decisions, 6 months. I got to that page, and it said, divorce is not the answer. It tears families apart, but doesn't solve the disease. And I asked my sponsor about that, and she said, no, I didn't write that. I didn't even know it was your 6 months. And, you know, today when I come to that page, today I do love my husband. And I didn't know, and it was probably about 3.5 years that I would go back and forth, and I would hear people say, are you going to divorce him today? Say, no. Okay, move on. And I thought, okay. And, you know, I'm grateful that I got the gifts of this program. You know, I get to keep coming back. And I remember thinking, I was told, you know, in Al-Anon, the woman sets the pace. I thought, another thing I need to do. And, you know, when I first came, my stepdaughter lived with us. She was 13. And I did not like my stepdaughter, and she did not like me. And a lot of that was because of my husband. You know, he was telling me stuff, and he was telling her stuff. And when I got here, I got to realize she's affected by the disease too. And I was like, oh, I got to tell her about it. And you know what I heard? I can't fix any of my loved ones. I can't fix my untreated mom. She upgraded from, you know, a daily gin drinker to a wine connoisseur. You know, I have a lot of alcoholism in my family. But what I do get to do is follow the examples of the people here. I do get to share family recovery. You know, my daughter is 7 now, and she gets to go to Allergene. And we get to do things different. And it's really interesting because I have a loving relationship with my stepdaughter today. She does not have a program. I don't know if she'll make it to the rooms of Al-Anon or AA. And you know what? It's none of my business. But today I get to be the example. I get to talk to her lovingly and treat her like I want to be treated. I have a mother-in-law that I used to hate until about a year and a half ago. And because I kept doing, my sponsor would say, go in and treat her like a newcomer. And my first impulse was, they don't want a program. Why should I treat them like a newcomer? And it was like, be the example. And there's been times I went to the Verizon store the other day, and I could have really lost it and really chewed this lady out. And I thought, you know what? She could walk into an Al-Anon meeting. And then what would I feel? And so today, I need to practice this program in all areas of my life. And, you know, I've had many times that my husband hasn't said thank you yet, but I'm not waiting for him to. You know, I just keep doing my deal. I get out of the way, and I get to see the example of me minding my own business and doing my own thing. And the example, I always knew I had at least one pair of eyes watching me. And sometimes that's what got me here. You know, on any given day, I don't want to do this anymore. This is too hard. It'd be easier to give up. It's like, no, I want something more for my daughter than I had. And I think I had a pretty good childhood. So for me, you know, it's like I don't want to be having a discussion like I had when I was 12 with my parents where they were saying, okay, if you ever are anywhere partying and you need a ride home, just call me. And my answer to them was, why? You've probably been drinking too. How am I going to get home safely? I'd better call a taxi. I mean, I was a smart aleck at that time. So that tells you at 12, I was telling my parents stuff like that because I had no problem telling them my feelings. But today I don't have to be that way. I love my parents. I love my husband, and I love his mother, which is a big deal. And I love my stepdaughter. I really do. You know, I don't know what program she's going to end up in, but, you know, there has been times that she has reached out, and she says, I don't understand. Why can, you know, somebody younger than me be in acceptance? She still says, Dad, it's before noon. Why are you opening a beer? And she hears her little sister say, because that's what he does. I mean, it's just total acceptance here. And that's what it's all about. And I love that I get to pass it on. And I get to be supportive to other people who live with this disease and may be raising kids in it. And just pass on the experiences that I have. And I'm grateful for the strength of this group because it's family recovery. And without it, I would have thought it was a me deal, not a we deal. And you guys taught me. You guys loved on my kid. They're like, detach from your daughter. Let us love on her, and then we can love on you. And I stopped being her mom. It's like, oh, you're such and such as mom. It's like, no, today I'm Marlene, and I know who I am, and I know what my favorite color is, and I know where I'd rather be. So thank you for letting me share.
Now, Catherine. Hi, I'm Catherine, grateful member of Al-Anon. I want to say first off that I'm my better self when I'm in these rooms, that I know who I am when I'm in these rooms, and I'm so grateful for that. I wasn't raised in the disease of alcoholism, but I know that I was applying my tools from a very early age, and they weren't tools of recovery. I learned how to manipulate, how to lie, how to be ashamed. I felt less than, and that was when I was a little girl. So I know today, looking back, that I'm my own qualifier for this program. That's just who I am. I was attracted to alcoholics very early, and a lot of my girlfriends were alcoholic. They drank alcoholically. I didn't see that. I was drinking right along with them. I've been married a number of times. 4 is the number. And it used to be when I shared that, that was my litmus test in the disease. If you could stand to be near me because I'd been married that many times, then maybe you could be my friend. And because I was so full of shame at the fact that I'd had so many marriages and divorces. And I don't have to feel shame about that today because that's just my story. I needed to do those things in order to finally get here and find recovery. When I came in the rooms of Al-Anon, I was a broken woman. I was morally and spiritually and emotionally bankrupt. And I knew it, but I didn't know what else to do but keep doing the things that I'd been doing. I was nuts. I came into these rooms because of an angry adolescent alcoholic. And at first, I was here for him. But very quickly, I learned that I got to stay for me. I'm here today because I want my recovery. It's a selfish program for me. I'm standing in front of you because it helps me to do it. If you hear something from me, then that's God. But I get to do this for myself because I need this. I need this. I need to learn how to do life on life's terms. I'm a whole lot more mature today than I was when I walked in the program. I was 50 years old, tired, exhausted, full of despair, and just done. I'd been running after an angry adolescent for a long time, trying to fix him. He had been my project. You know, I'd done that. I've done a number of geographics in this program, not in this program, in the disease. I've gone all the way from Colorado to California, and I came to California because if I went any further west, I would be treading water. And then I went from Northern California to Southern California. All of those things, all of those geographics were divorcing a drinker. Somebody whose drinking bothered me. And when I came to Southern California, I had this kid that I had loved so much. In fact, I had two boys at the time. And I decided that I wasn't going to get married again. Never, ever, never, ever, 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 never. Because I knew what my problem was. I had a broken picker, and I wasn't going to do that anymore. But I took the disease right along with me. Took the disease of alcoholism with me wherever I went. It was my actions and my reactions and my anger and my despair and my blaming and my justifying. All of those things came right along with me to Southern California with those two boys. And life went on. Sure enough, I married again. What a surprise. Had another child. My middle son, who I had turned into my project because he had lots of problems and lots of issues, got older. And when he got into junior high school, he started to stay truant from school. He started to run around. He started to be absent from home for a long time. He ran away. He never went to school. He got into trouble. He had parties in our house when we were gone. And I thought by that time that it was because all of the people that he interacted with didn't understand him. It was because his stepfather was wrong. It was because I was wrong. It was because his teachers were wrong. It was because his counselor was wrong. It was because the school administrator was wrong. Everybody was wrong. I never held him accountable for anything he did. Here was our relationship. Mom, can I have X, Y, or Z? And the answer would be yes. I wanted to feel good. When he was happy, I was happy. When he was sad, I was sad. When he was miserable, I was miserable. He wanted things, I gave him things. I thought that bribery was the cure for the disease of whatever it was that he had. Not so. So one day, he was doing what he was doing, and stole a bottle of vodka from Albertsons and drank it by himself within an hour and a half. And it ended up in the hospital for alcohol poisoning. And, of course, I went along with him, spent the night with him. And I didn't realize it then, but that was a gift to me. Because in a few weeks, he was in rehab. And I was too. You know, they had all of those family group meetings and the sitting in the parents groups meetings and the meetings, and then Al-Anon panels came in, and I started to listen to what those counselors had to say. And for the first time in my life, really, in a very long time, people were an attraction to me. The sober alcoholics in that rehab were an attraction to me. It was in rehab that I heard the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. And I can remember the hair on the back of my neck standing up because I wanted that. I wanted what those people had. I wanted the light in my eyes that they had in theirs. I wanted recovery. And because they told me to go to Al-Anon, and they told me a lot, often. In fact, they told me so often I referred to those counselors as the Al-Anon and on and on and on and on and on. I got tired of hearing about Al-Anon, but because I was done and because I was full of despair and I had no answers, none anymore for anybody, including myself, and I was sweetly reasonable for the first time in ever, probably, because I'm not the sweetly reasonable kind of person. I said yes, and I went. And I started hearing my answers. I started hearing what I could do to get better. I started to hear about God. I started to hear about a higher power. And they said to get a sponsor, and because I'm a good student and I listen in class, and I wanted to graduate with honors, I did. And I started to listen to what she had to say. And I didn't do it perfect. I didn't do it perfect at all. I couldn't make my call times. That was one of the first suggestions that she made to me was to keep my call times. And I couldn't for the life of me to remember how to do a call time. I was either days late or minutes late or hours late, and I thought she was going to fire me. I remember calling her on her phone at home, and I'd done it again, probably for the 10th or the 15th or however many times I'd done it. And she was a stewardess, so she was already gone. She didn't wait around for me. And I started crying. There I am, leaving this long, rambling, sobbing message on her answering machine. I am so sorry. I'm so, so sorry. I'm so, 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 so sorry. And finally, her alcoholic husband, her sober husband, picked up the phone and said, for God's sake, you've got to stop doing this to yourself. And, you know, I heard it from him. I did. I heard the message from him. Okay, I said, I guess I can do that, you know. My sponsor suggested that I come to the hall here, and I did. And I started meeting a lot of women with recovery. And I came to the family group meetings on Saturday, and I got to get honest there. I remember standing in front of all y'all and telling you how much I liked to be with my son and how I felt like he was sort of my soulmate. I remember sharing that. And I also remember telling you how much I enjoyed giving him things, how good I felt when I did. And every single person that shared after me talked about their mother. And I heard it. For the first time, I heard from you what I was doing by enabling my alcoholic son. I heard. You know, my sponsor had been telling me, you know, Catherine, the kind of love that you have could kill an alcoholic. I did not appreciate that information from her. I did not believe it. I loved my son. I love him. I'm connected to him in a psychic way. And she wasn't having any of it, and I didn't appreciate her opinion. I thought she was a little crazy. But I heard it from you. Every single alcoholic that got up at that podium talked about their mother. And it wasn't flattering. It wasn't a flattering picture. And Keith got up and talked about women who killed their children by loving them. And I heard that too. And for the first time, I realized what I was doing, that it was all about me. I got to work the steps, got to see how self-centered I am, self-absorbed. Got to see that it's all about ego and no self-worth. I got to take the program home and do it different at home. Got to get my daughter, my youngest child, into Alateen. And I got to see her blossom and flourish and turn into a graceful, poised, mature young woman. And that has nothing to do with me and a lot to do with program. You know, I got to see my husband stand up one day and say, I'm going to go to a meeting. You know, and that had nothing to do with me either. It's just that I got out of his business for the first time and stopped offering him helpful suggestions. I stopped minding other people's business and started minding my own. I stopped being a fixer and started looking into myself. You know, today I'm so grateful. I have a God of my own understanding. I have a sponsor that loves me and tells me the truth. I have women that I get to sponsor and who are willing to call me sponsor, and they're such a gift in my life. You know, I'm not the same woman that I was when I walked in these rooms, but I know that I could go back and be her again. And because I don't want that, I get to stay. So thanks for allowing me to share.